Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Mr. Brian Castle, good to be with you.
Hey, Jordan. How's it going, bud?
It's good. It's good. We are we're rock and roll over here. Ever since we turned the corner on September, we have been just the intensity has been growing every week at Carthook. So having fun with it. Got some things to talk about today. How about you?
Yeah.
How are things?
Yeah, awesome. Doing good. You know, some things are going on this month, but it's been a little bit of a scattered month, mostly because of travel. And I've got another trip next week. I'm going to Cabo, Mexico. I can't wait for that. I'm going to Cabo Press, my second year back, this time as a speaker. I say speaker, but really it's like standing in a pool with a bunch of other people, like leading a sort of workshop. It's amazing. At this incredible resort in Cabo, Chris Lema organizes and just creates such a fantastic whole atmosphere there. Actually, my wife is going to join me on that trip, so I'm pretty psyched. It's kind of like half vacation, half, you know, business conference. So that's happening next week. And so this week, of course, I'm in this like scramble mode to get all these things done or shipped before I go to this, you know, resort vacation. And I'm working with my developer. We'll get into all that, but not quite as productive before today's Friday deadline as I would have liked to be, but that is what it is.
Yes. Cool. And yeah, my productivity this week has been challenged by Rock and Jan, our CTO and principal engineer. We're over here from Slovenia. So we were out a lot, going out to lunches with the team and doing a lot of meetings and listening and talking to people and asking for their opinion on prioritization. But it wasn't that much time at the computer getting things done. So I have a backlog. Lucky for me, my wife is out of town this week. So this weekend, so I just have the kids. They go to bed at like 8 o'clock and I have like a few nights to catch up.
Very cool. Very cool.
If I'm not too tired.
I know you fly out to Slovenia, you know, a couple times a year. Like how often do they come to Portland?
Twice a year.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I'm not going next month, but a few people from the team here in Portland are going. Yeah. So we're starting to get like the exchange rolling more often and less about me going over there.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
I do find it fascinating these companies who are sort of like a remote hybrid and even those who are like more remote, but they make efforts to get people together. Like that's something I would really love to get to in the next couple of years as I build into more of a software company. It'll definitely be remote, but I would like to get to a point where we have people meeting up, and myself included. Yeah. But for now, it's just me. So
yes.
and a remote team on audience ops, but like meetups just don't make as much sense with that business for some reason.
Yes. For us, a big meetup once a year with everybody definitely makes sense. But as we keep growing, the expense of that keeps growing. And so I have just not been able to identify, hey, here's a good time to spend $40,000 on a trip. So we're just kind of waiting. I'm aiming to do it once we get a target amount of monthly profit. And I think we can get there in like Q1 or Q2. So that's my goal. But we would definitely benefit from it, and it would definitely be worth it. It's just a severe cash expense.
Yeah. That's what I think about every time I hear about these companies doing these retreats. I'm just like, wow, that's got to be a chunk of change to do every one of those.
Yeah. And I see companies doing conferences also, at least in the Shopify e-commerce space. A lot of successful software companies are doing conferences, like their own mini 1 or 2 day conferences. And I go to them. I just went to one for Recharge, which is our really important integration partner of ours down in LA. And it was a great event. It's definitely like $100,000. Easy.
But are they charging for?
They are charging, but it's not like they're aiming to like make money off of it. Like there's no way it's in the black. Like they would have to charge a lot more. It's a beautiful Lowe's hotel right on the beach in Santa Monica. Like the whole thing was really well done.
And yeah, we see this a lot now with like some more established SaaS companies doing conferences, but I see them more as like they're not intended for profit. It's more about like a branding, customer loyalty kind of thing, but it should at least break even in terms of their costs or come close, you know.
Right. Like chip away at the overall expense. I remember being there saying to myself, when it comes time that we are like in the same shoes, we just shouldn't do it. that was my general take on it. I was like, the amount of attention and effort devoted to this seems like it's probably not worth it. But talk to me in a year or two and we'll see.
I do like that trend. Not that I go to a lot of those types of conferences, but like I just generally like the idea of community-based marketing. Like if you can build a community around your product and a conference can really help with that, like that keeps people loyal to that tribe, you know?
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Absolutely. I know ClickFunnels did a ridiculously good job at community building, and they had that annual event and people would go to it and talk about it. And it was like a whole like emotional event of like, you know, celebrating success and bring people up on stage and hearing these big life-changing stories. So I think, yeah, you have a point on that.
Yeah, very cool. What's first on the docket here?
All right. So I'll go first. We are going through a relatively new experience. We have a product release coming up. It's effectively a feature release, but it happens to be at a very interesting intersection in e-commerce, specifically around the CBD market. And it also has to do with a few with the timing of it makes it so that it's actually like news. So like we think we can like get press. Like it's that level of importance in the market and in the market timing.
When you say news, do you mean like there's some other news event that
yes,
that this is sort of intersecting with?
Yes, that's right. So we are not creating the news. We are just aware of an event that's going to create big news from a much larger company. We have a lot to do with it. So like our release is intended to piggyback off of it and draft alongside that much larger company's news, because their news is going to create a very big question in the market, and our feature answers that question. And obviously, so that's a really big opportunity for us. And the larger company also wants to work with us to get as much attention to us as possible. So all of a sudden we're talking to the PR team of a much larger company. It's kind of like a rolling announcement and then a blog post and then an email thing, and we run some ads. It's just kind of generally laid back. And this is not. This is like a specific deadline with a press embargo that we can't say anything until a certain day and time. And then after that, we're free to talk about it. And so the whole team is aimed toward, okay, how do we maximize the impact of this news? And everyone's involved.
It's funny because we talked about this before going on air today, and we were like, well, so like, when is this podcast going to go live? We're like, all right, we're just not even going to touch what it is because, you know,
right,
we don't know, you know.
Right. There's a lot of uncertainty, especially with a much larger company that has the embargo, and you're playing nice with them because they're your partner and so on.
What about internally, like with your team? Does everybody on the team know what's happening? Or?
Yes, but it has gone along every step of the way with very, very clear guidelines. And so we have a lot of people asking us about it from all angles. So when we're on sales calls, people say, can you do X? Support team is getting it. Everyone is getting it all over the place. And so that means everyone needs to be on the same page. And fortunately, we hired a director of communications roughly 2 months ago. And now she's like hitting her stride and is up to speed. And it's making a big difference in the company. And so when something like this comes out, she basically immediately steps up and says, okay, I'm gonna own the responsibility of how we communicate about this. And then so she sets out, here are the two sentences that you should say over a call. Here's what you should say over support. Assume everything that you say is either being recorded or is going to be screenshot and put on Twitter. Like, this is how we behave. This is how we think about it. So that's been really helpful. It's just coincidence that we have what is effectively a big communications challenge right now, right as she's getting up to speed. So I'm like feeling really good about that hire.
Yeah, wow. It's like, what does a director of communications do other than what you just described? Like, is that like lumped in with marketing, or is there like?
So I don't want to say it's lumped in with marketing, but it works hand in hand with marketing. So she and our marketer, Ed, they work really closely together. but they have different responsibilities. And so communication, the way we look at it is that it crosses further beyond just marketing. So it's positioning and content, things like that, that are marketing related. But then it goes all the way across to, does our product sound the same way as our blog sounds? Does the website sound the same way? Are our support people talking about our company in the same way? Is it consistent? So there's just kind of a lot that goes outside of the marketing world. The other challenging part of it is expectations. So you want people to get really pumped up and focused and like, you know, I very rarely set deadlines. Like you have to do this by this day. It's like, we're just more casual than that. But this is one of those things where it's like, no, do not mess around. If you have something to do, if you're writing a support doc for this feature, if you're writing the blog post, if you're setting up the emails that need to go out to people that are going to come in because of it, like, don't mess around. Get it done that day that you're supposed to get it done so that the next day, if something new happens, you're ready for it. At the same time, you don't want to get everyone misaligned on expectations, expecting like, oh my God, this is going to be this huge thing. And then if it doesn't turn into this huge thing, everyone's disappointed. So it's just been a tricky balance, mostly because we just don't do it normally. So it's a new experience. But hopefully on Friday of next week, you'll hear about it.
That's right.
Yes. Cool.
Very,
how about you?
Very awesome. So I guess the main thing that has been sort of on my plate, on my radar, has been working with this new developer. I think I've spoken about it in the last couple of episodes. So I did just bring on a part-time developer. And as of today, so we're recording today, Friday, what is today, September 27th. It's been about 2 weeks that he's been officially on board. And before those 2 weeks, I was away on a different trip and he was just getting started. But really, it's been the past 2 weeks that we've been working on Process Kit together. He's a part-time person, so our agreement is that he's working with me 3 full days a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then Thursday through the weekend, he's not officially working with me. I'll be honest, like today, 2 weeks into it, I have questions, and he and I have talked about this a little bit, about we're still getting our bearings in terms of what's the most optimal workflow for us to work together and to be as productive and efficient and non-distracting and focused as possible. And you and I have talked for years now about like how impatient and how we want speed and how we want to ship things week to week. And I am definitely that way too. Like I get seriously impatient about features shipping, you know, but up until now, that impatience was completely in my control because I'm the one developing. So I can hustle, I can focus on the things that I know are important. I cannot work on the things that I know are not important. I control all that. Once you bring in a second pair of hands, another developer, it is a challenge to just make sure that you're both working on the right things and not getting yourself into a rabbit hole or into a blocker that you know is not that important. I think that he and I have both acknowledged that it's going to take some time for us to like get our workflows and our schedules right and how we plan the week right to be more efficient. And it is only 2 weeks in here. So that being said, I do feel a little bit frustrated today, Friday. I think partly because I've got this trip coming up next week. So it's not like we can just like roll with this into Monday and pick it up. Like it's going to be another whole week before I'm actually back in the office. So, you know, like basically what happened was I'll just give a little bit more detail. So today's Friday, right? His official work days with me were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. Monday, we have a call Monday morning. And by the way, he's in South Africa. I'm in East Coast of US. So he's about, I think, six hours ahead. Technically, like half of his work day would overlap mine, but he tends to work at night. So really most of his work day overlaps with mine. So Monday morning, we have this call about like, all right, what are we going to work on this week? And my plan to work on this week was two things. One was the Zapier integration. We already have a Zapier integration, but we need to expand it to integrate with more of our newer features. We've had a bunch of customer requests around the Zapier integration, and I'm really psyched to get this thing shipped. And it's really just a few, like we already have the thing built. It's just adding a few more capabilities onto it. My hope was that he would tackle that for the majority of his time this week, and hopefully by today or by yesterday, Thursday or Friday of this week, I would have been able to send an email out to the process kit list to say, hey, the Zapier has just been expanded. We've got all these new capabilities. Check it out. Good excuse to send another batch of invites. And we didn't get there, you know. And there was a second thing that I put on the plate, which was on Tuesday of us working together, was for he and I to have a pair programming session where I would be taking on a different feature. Dynamic dates is another highly requested feature. My plan was that I would be the one building that feature, but to start that feature off, I kind of want to get the benefit of pair programming with a guy like him who's much more experienced than me. So we did that on Tuesday morning, and basically saying like, hey, okay, you take a break from Zapier for like an hour so you and I can have this pair programming session. We did that pair programming session. But I think through that, as we started working on that feature, there were some things that didn't quite work out right, or we went down this first approach that didn't work so well. And then after the call, he was like, all right, well, I'll look into those things. Maybe I can fix them up in an hour or two, and then you can run with it from there. We're like, great. But then that little thing like dragged on throughout the rest of Tuesday, and now we're into Wednesday, and like Zapier is still sort of like hanging in the balance. Zapier by its nature is slower to test because you've got to do ngrok and like, you know, work with Zapier system. It's kind of annoying. So now we're into Wednesday, and now it's like a sort of a communication thing where I started telling him like, look, don't work on that dynamics dates feature. I'm taking that over. Just focus on Zapier because that's the one thing that I want to ship this week. He's working on it, and I understand that there's some unexpected complexities with it, and he's new to the process kit code base, which I know slows people down naturally, expectedly. But I mean, here we are Friday, and you know, not much finished up on Wednesday or Thursday, and I'm getting some like conflicting messages. Like, I want to be understanding that I know that he does have other projects besides mine to work on, and all that, and he's got a family at home. I completely understand that. Like, I just feel like we ended up this week and now I've got to go on a trip and there's nothing to ship until I can get back, you know?
Yes. So I can sympathize, right? There is an element to just the nature of the software development process that makes itself very susceptible to this sort of thing. Unexpected complexity, very difficult to estimate. Priority communication is difficult. I mean, I would focus more than anything on the communication, on what do we need to do to avoid something like that. At least for me, I don't have as much product experience as other people. And so I generally tend to look at myself first. What could I have done better? What did I do wrong? What conflicting message? I have made little tiny comments in Slack about another feature that sends someone in that direction that messes up the actual business priority. And it's just completely my fault. And I didn't think it was.
I'm the same way. I really do take responsibility for every, and I, honestly, I do for this sort of thing. And I think looking back at this week, what I learned really, and as I said, like this collaborative workflow with a brand new developer, it takes several weeks to learn and figure each other out. And it was the pair programming session that really threw the week off track, to be honest. And as much as I want to do more pair programming, I think that the way we went about it this week was not right.
Right. You put it in the middle of a priority.
Yeah. Number one, it was right in the middle of the priority. I think it would have been better if I had just gone and worked on the feature myself first, and then we have a call where he can review my code and he can like critique what I've already written, rather than he and I just getting on a call starting from first line of code and we just talk about what we're doing. Like, I was driving and he was kind of, you know, directing or whatever, and like that was just like right in the middle of the week when he should have just been focused on the one thing. So that was my fault, I think. And I think going forward, and he and I sort of already talked about this, was like, I think it's probably better if I tackle a feature and then he reviews it. He tackles a feature, I'll test it out and review it, and like at this point I can read his code, you know, so I could see what's going on and things like that. We're definitely going to continue having like a call every day like we've been doing, more about like planning, where are we at, like with the technical planning, what's on the roadmap today and things like that. And I still want to make sure that like, okay, today's Monday, by the end of Wednesday, we are planning on being here, or at least every day as we learn new things, we're going to say, okay, start in the morning here, I'm going to end up here, or at least communicate why a new blocker came up that's pushing it, you know, to the following
yes
day.
You want to be charitable in the interpretation, especially once you establish the trust of, okay, this person's good and they work hard, it's just software and it's not going to be perfect and it's not going to meet expectations perfectly. I mean, what you just described is an adjustment into the process. And you can pretty much expect that forever. It's like a Roomba where you just run into a wall, sometimes minor, sometimes major, and you just make an adjustment and it just goes on forever. We are making adjustments constantly. Rock and Yon were here. We made more adjustments. We just identify things that are wrong and then you fix them and you try to make a little better. And I'm sure something else will pop up on, oh, that seems obvious in retrospect that we didn't do that right. Now we add that in. So it's definitely a getting better process. Reminds me of the Shape Up book and the positioning that they talked about it, where they said, this is a snapshot in time right now. We're kind of comfortable enough now to expose our process, but it's not done. This is a snapshot in time where we are right now after X number of years.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you guys are just getting started.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm sort of noticing, like I said about the time zones, is I start working in the office. Like after I drop my daughter off at school, I get back into the office by like 9 a.m. That's when I'm really starting to hit it hard on the computer. Like he's really starting his day around like my 3 a.m. or so, 3 or 4 a.m. And then he's getting into like midday by that point. By early afternoon my time, you know, he's doing dinner and then he usually does a few more hours after dinner of work. Which gets into my afternoon. But in my afternoon, we're sort of like wrapping up and trying to finish something by the end of today. And he's getting like late night, like getting burnt out. Like, I got to call it a night soon. I could sense a little bit of like, you know, hey, like I've been working like 9 hours today, 10 hours today. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to tell you to like keep working or anything like that. You know, I'm not trying to paint a picture like I'm requiring anybody to work any specific hours.
This is just the situation.
I'm just saying like we're at different energy levels due to our time zones, you know?
I think you should acknowledge it and not hold back because that is what creates the resentment. You're better off just saying it and say, look, when we talk, I'm super pumped up and you're on your way down. How do we get it to a place where you can basically get pumped up for just the time that we're talking and I can kind of expect that to last a very limited amount of time and we're just syncing up and then you should know after our sync up, like you're good. You can start to wind down and code quietly and do whatever you need. All that honesty around the adjustments is necessary to build up the trust and a little bit of love. You know, you need sympathy to understand the other person's point of view. And I know the guys I've worked with don't have kids. They're dealing with me and I have constant responsibilities and all these time restrictions and they have to adjust to that. And yeah, you kind of have to start to get intertwined with each other's lives and work schedules.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All that being said, it has been pretty exciting so far. Like we have shipped a few small things. And like, there were a few things that like he was able to get some quick wins, especially in the previous week, while I did some other things. Like I made some good progress on the Process Kit marketing site. And like, these are things that if it was just me, like it was before, I would have to do one after the other and it would take several more weeks. So it does feel great to be shipping and just doing more with a second pair of hands for sure.
You know? Yeah, that's awesome. And I know for me, sadly, I've had to come to terms with a complete realignment of my expectations. I mean, I used to just think there's no way anything can take longer than a month. And now I'm just okay with the fact that if we want to not scramble the priorities, this thing that I think is important really might just take 3 to 6 months. And that's just the way it is. Because when you put them all down on a whiteboard, would you rather it move before these other things? No, and therefore just settle into the whole process and be patient.
It's hard to sort of describe this thing. And I wonder how credible I am when I talk about stuff like this. But like, I feel like I am super fast when I build software features. I was slow for a while, and I still am slow when I'm building something that I've never built before. But when I'm building a feature that's pretty similar to a feature that I've already built, like, I'm going really, really fast. And I think part of that is because I'm also the founder of the product. As the founder, not only do I want it to move fast, I want to ship soon, but it's also like I'm also the one who defines what is the priority, what is absolutely important to have in this feature, and what can I realize, like, oh, that's going to be a technical challenge. I can figure out a workaround for that because there's a business case to do a workaround for that. As the maker slash founder, it does help to wear both of those hats at the same time, because I could much more rapidly figure out how to get from here to shippable as quickly as possible. Whereas with a developer, no matter how much you communicate with them and have a daily call with them and write detailed specs and all that, you're never going to have that same exact level of clarity on, like, okay, if the button has to be here instead of there, that's not a big deal, or that definitely is a big deal. Like, you're never going to really have that clarity, you know?
You nailed it. I don't think it's a matter of motivation. It's probably not a matter of skill and general speed of development. It's that you don't feel the friction along every single micro decision that anyone else is going to feel. I just spent the past week in a Jira ticket explaining details that I think are so obvious, but they're not. They're obvious to me on why I would do X and why it would work this way. But to the engineer, every single time, every move you make, every new line of code is a new decision of, well, what happens about this? What if a user does this thing? What about this other thing we talked about? And you're just running right through all those. So I have sympathy for an engineer that is trying to figure out, well, what would he want? What would Brian want it to do? And why would he want it to do it that way?
Exactly. Like, any person who's not the founder is going to have a whole set of other concerns that are related to how they do their work that the founder doesn't really have, and vice versa. Like, I'm not saying, like, only the founder is the one who can build the product effectively. I'm definitely not saying that. But it's just harder to navigate, like, especially as you're just getting the team started. Like, you know, because they're thinking about, like, all right, am I doing my job correctly? Am I being a responsible engineer from using best practices? Is this really what my boss wants, or is this what the customer wants? Or, like, are they concerned with how this is going to impact the customer support team? Are they not concerned with that, whereas the founder might be concerned with that? Like, there are just all these different cross paths to think about in every little, like you said, like every micro decision that goes into whether we go down this coding rabbit hole or not, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Well, we're looking forward to hearing, you know, how it goes over the next few weeks and what other adjustments you make and where it goes.
Cool. What else you got?
Well, so we're going a bit long here. So I think the one thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap is the survey that MicroConf put out. So this is like a state of the SaaS marketplace for non-venture track software companies.
Mm-hmm. I saw that. I haven't gone through it yet. I have it marked as unread in my inbox, like 10 other to-dos. So yeah, I'm excited to go through it. I like the development.
Yes. So I took it. Takes about 10 minutes. I would encourage anyone listening who runs a software company to fill it out. The thing I'm really excited about is to start getting more data around our peers. And I mean company peers, not, you know, people peers. Right now, with the complete lack of information around other non-venture track software companies, we are left to compare ourselves to the venture track, where there is data and people are talking about growth rate and what you need to hit within which year before you get a Series A or a Series B. And we're much more familiar with that because there's a lot of data published around it and a lot of mythology and a lot of just common wisdom and whatever else. And as long as there's no non-venture track information, we're left to compare ourselves to that. And that becomes an unhealthy comparison. And then we basically just throw up our hands and say, well, I'm just not going to compare myself to that information because it doesn't make sense. And then we're left without comparison. We don't know where we stand. We don't know how we're doing.
The other thing that we can turn to for comparisons or for just information are basically just stories, like stories that we hear at conferences, stories that we hear on podcasts, you know, stories that we hear in our meetups and we talk to friends and peers in this work, but we don't have the hard data. We don't have the metrics. We don't know what the industry trends are. And sometimes a lot of those stories, especially the ones that you hear like on stages at conferences, those are just the stories of the people who ended up on stage at conferences. They're not the story. There are plenty of other businesses, non-venture backed businesses that are doing pretty amazing things, or probably plenty of larger trends that don't get talked about. They're not super public about them, you know? So that's, I am really interested to take the survey and then definitely see the results.
Yeah. The questions are interesting because it talks about things you would expect, like growth rates and revenue and number of employees, but also around marketing. What do you see as your most important channels? Where do you spend the most money? Where do you focus? So you can really see what other software companies are doing, not just how they're performing.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I sort of worry about it just in general with things like this, surveys and like polls and stuff like that, like is how it can be misinterpreted, you know, or that people will start to draw certain conclusions about things when they don't have the full context of why certain numbers show a certain thing or who, what were the people's circumstances behind those numbers and stuff like that. Like it always sort of bothers me when I hear people talk about these things like, oh, this other company did it that way. So that's the best practice. That's why I'm doing a thing or not doing a thing. Cause it definitely worked for them. So it should work for me or you shouldn't do that because it didn't work for them. Like I hate statements like that.
Good luck with that. Yeah. That's I agree with that. That kills creativity. The truth is I'm like a closet anti-data person. Everyone like wants the data. And I'm like, yeah, what about the intuition? What about the experience? What about the creativity? So I think data has a part. And I think what the survey can do is just set out, here's the aggregate information from companies that are similar. And that just starts you off. It doesn't mean you're not doing well if you don't hit 10K MRR at the same time frame as everyone else. But it does start to give you some type of a frame.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like that, but I'm probably even more to the camp of like not as in touch with data and much more guided by intuition and gut feel and decision making as I see it on the ground. But I think sometimes that's to a fault. And sometimes I wish I had some more context to that kind of stuff, at least to like confirm or you know, disprove certain decisions.
Yeah. The other thing is I'm kind of really excited for MicroConf not to be in Las Vegas this coming year. That's actually very exciting.
Yeah. I'm just excited to see Minneapolis. I've never been there.
So yeah. Same. Cool, man. Anything else on your side?
No. Well, I did write, what I wrote down is onboarding challenge. I'm this won't take too long, I don't think, but, just thinking about the Process Kit product, as I said, this month has been a little bit scattered, so I wasn't able to onboard, and mostly due to travel, I wasn't able to like onboard as many new people as possible. But I did have a few calls with customers and early users this month, which were good in that they confirmed, like they gave me some objections as to like why they can't use the product, and it sort of confirmed the features that we're building over the next month or two. I'm pretty excited about that. But still, even beyond building those features, I think I've said it before, onboarding and getting customers and their teams to adopt the tool is definitely the onboarding. It's the onboarding challenge. It's going to continue to be a challenge. You know, like people, like we have paying customers, some have converted right away, even without much in terms of like documentation or onboarding. But like, I think there's way more people who would get on board if they had like a concierge onboarding sort of thing, or there's been a lot of requests for like templates, like give me like built-in process templates and systems that I can get off and running with and that I can edit to my needs. So one of the features that we're building right now, like halfway built at this point, is a way for me to like import a, what I'm calling a kit, which is like a set of processes and some project types and some custom fields already made into an account. So I'm hoping in the next month that'll get shipped out, and then having that ability will be good for me to first get some templates and use that as like a marketing thing, use it as like an onboarding thing, but then work it into like some like done with you onboarding, maybe like a paid service around that. I'm not sure, but you know, something related to like we'll audit your processes, we'll get your team on board, we'll streamline your operations and get you set up in Process Kit. I would call that like the highest priority problem that I need to solve in the next few months is getting over that hump, you know?
How to translate someone's interest in the product to them actually up and running with it. I had a good experience recently with a company called PartnerPage. So PartnerPage allows you to set up effectively a partner page, but it has a bunch of features around it, so you don't have to do it yourself. Your partners can go update their profile on their own. It looks good, and there's a good search. You can have categories and tags. It just kind of offloads a whole bunch of design and work on our front, and it works for both our app partners and our agency partners. So we found this product, started using it. I think the team it's less than 10 people, and they do everything for you on the onboarding. For $179 a month, which is just the normal SaaS fee. It's not like you're paying any extra for onboarding. They do everything. They design it for you, update your existing partners. They literally hand you the keys like it's done. Here's the car. It's cleaned. It's oiled. It's gassed. Ready to drive. Done. I was really, really impressed by that. And I kind of challenged our team to it. It's like, okay, we're charging $500 a month plus the transaction fee. So our average revenue per user is north of $500 a month. Are we doing that much work for each one? Because it might be worth it. So, you know, we're looking to improve our onboarding overall. And what they're doing is just, they're just taking it into their own hands. They're just saying, we will do it for you. Don't even worry about it.
Just listening to the language of some of the customer feedback that I hear, like, you know, because I've got a couple of emails there where I ask like, hey, why didn't you convert? Like, tell me, I'm hungry for your objections, you know? And a lot of them are saying like, or I've heard this a few times where they're like, I definitely want to use it. I'm kind of sold on the value, but next month is when we're going to do a whole overhaul of our processes, or we plan to work on our processes as like a big project for us to do later in the year. They recognize it's a problem. They recognize they need to invest in it, but they also recognize that it is a project to do.
Yes. Like you've just added a lot to their to-do list.
Yeah. But like, I think I can sort of leverage that and maybe offering like a productized consulting to say like at first it would be me, but eventually like somebody on my team to be like, hey, I will project manage that with you over the course of a month. We will audit your processes. We will get our recommended client onboarding process implemented for you. We'll do a private workshop with your team. And that's like a couple $1,000 engagement, but it gets you all set up, you know, it gets you sort of like committed to it. That's sort of what I'm thinking. But on a lighter touch level of that, we are going to have the ability to import these templates. And I was talking to, this was actually a call with a customer. He owns another SaaS, and he was saying, I think he heard some recommendation somewhere about it's better to pre-populate the tool with some content. Scenario A is like a customer comes in and the page is blank. It's like, okay, what do I do? It's like deer in the headlights. I don't even know where to start. But scenario B is customer comes in and they've got something pre-populated, like a process that's already pre-populated. They can look at it and say, oh no, that's wrong. Let me go in and fix it. So they see that it's wrong, but it engages them because it's like, let me go in and fix it. And now I'm actually using the tool and I know what needs to be fixed to make it right. And now the tool fits. So it's like, even if your pre-populated template it might be off for some users, that's still better than nothing because it gets them like engaged with it, you know?
Yeah. I think you'll have to experiment with that on what the right combination is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's all I got.
All right, man. We did it.
Yeah. All right. So we'll probably be off next week because I'll be traveling back from Mexico, but then back at it after that.
Well, enjoy your time in Cabo and be on the lookout for front page Wall Street Journal card hook.
Yeah. It'll be either you guys or Trump. We'll see.
Oh, God. All right, man. Good stuff. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Yeah. Cheers.